Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Crush Pad. I guess all of our guests are special. I don't know why, but this is a very special one. Welcome, Simon Wolf of The Morning Claret. I hit that T really well, huh?
That was great. Thank you, John. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know, as I said, right before we start recording, I've been a big fan, and you've had kind of a banger last couple of years. There's been so many articles I could have DM'd you and said we should talk about. Congratulations on that. Where do you find the time to write?
That's a good question. I mean, I'd put it a different way. I guess I kind of have to write. I think it's how I get things out of my system, really. I think the challenge is that sometimes I don't always want to write the things that actually pay the bills.
I know that one.
That's the problem.
I have a couple articles I'm working on right now, and the one I know that I'm going to find at home for is which weed strains natural wine drinkers would like. And I know that I can get that published in any magazine, the other one I'm working on, you don't hate California, you hate capitalism. I feel like that one's going to be a little bit harder to find a home for.
Oh, I like that though. Yeah. That sounds like it's right up my street.
We'll see. I'm sure after editing, it's just going to be, you know, we don't like Roundup, but so I have a lot of questions for you. I think the first one I want to start, kind of a softball. We just finished a season on Central Europe, specifically wines from the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the ex-Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Cool.
And something that kind of came up to my podcast partner and I, something that I think you touch in a lot, which is Central Europe. I almost said Central Europe supremacy, but I feel like that gets a bit difficult. But I guess Central Europe versus Western Europe wine attitudes. And I wonder if you've got any thoughts on that.
I think there's some fundamental differences, and maybe one of the biggest ones is that a large chunk of Central Europe is still there is still this long tail from socialism, communism, call it whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You know, if we talk about the ex-Yugoslavia mm-hmm. countries, or we talk about Slovakia, Czechia, mm-hmm. you know, all of these countries they're relatively new to the world of quality wine as we know it. You know, we're mm-hmm. talking the 90s, really.
Absolutely.
And obviously, if you you know, if you look at France or Spain or Italy, it's a very different kettle of fish.
They've been making good wine for easily 50 or 60 years. Yeah.
So I think that's a big thing. You know, the historical long tail. But I think the other thing, I mean, the reason that excites me so much about Central Europe is, at least for the moment, they've kind of got the climate with them.
They sure do, don't they? Climate change is it's being kind in a way that I think the Ottomans weren't. So I you know, there's a lot of places are getting, it feels weird to say better, but are getting better at making wine. Yeah.
Well, I think it's really, it's partly that the places are getting better at making wine, but I think everyone's getting better at making wine. You know, if you look at the amount of knowledge and experience that there is out there these days. But I think when you talk about Central Europe, it really is historical. I mean, I know, for example, I know families in Slovakia mm-hmm. that didn't get their land back until the mid-2000s.
Yeah, that would kind of present a hurdle to making wine, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we really are talking about a very long historical tale here. You know, we're really talking about the effects that the 20th century has had on these countries in terms of winemaking. So I think that's the biggest part of it. I mean, of course, we could exclude Austria from that, maybe. I know Austria's had other challenges, but...
Yeah, that's a fun way of thinking about Austrian challenges. Now, I think I would like to give you just a quick moment also to tell people where they can find this, all this fun writing, just in case I forget to plug it myself.
Sure. Yeah. Well, my primary medium for publishing stuff at the moment is themorningclaret.com. That's my site, which started off as a very amateur wine blog in 2011.
Oh,
and
God.
It's been, yeah, I know. It's, and you can still actually, if you really dig deep, you can still go back and read the very first post that I wrote.
Do you still stand by them?
I leave it there as a sort of reminder to myself of what a terrible writer I was back then, you know.
Well, I mean, sure, you may. I agree. You probably were terrible. Like, that's so long ago. Everyone was a worse writer 14 years ago. But were your wine opinions correct?
I think I was still. I mean, I was still on a bit of a voyage of discovery. You know, I didn't. I think it's like everyone. You know, when you don't work professionally in the world of wine, your experience tends to be a lot more limited.
Of course.
And I definitely came from a place, I mean, the whole reason the site's called The Morning Claret, it's basically a joke, because I did start off as a Bordeaux lover, actually.
Oh, man.
And to be perfectly honest with you, I still am when it's good, you know, when it's what I signed up for, which is, you know, fresh, crunchy tannins, lots of acidity, lots of Cabernet Sauvignon. I love it. But that's really where I came in. And as I started blogging, I think I started getting more and more adventurous, and I started realizing that actually discovery is a lot more interesting than just drinking the same thing over and over again.
I'm looking through your publishing record right now, and I don't know when the last time you even mentioned France. There's January 28th, 2022, How to Survive Le Dive, but you didn't write it.
No, I didn't. That's written by my colleague Hannah. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't write a great deal about France, and one of the reasons is that I think there's just so many other people doing it.
I think so.
And it was kind of when I realized that the whole wine and writing thing was getting serious. I was smart enough to, you know, wasn't smart in many ways, but I was smart enough to realize that actually having a point of difference and not just writing about the same stuff that everybody writes about was probably a good thing.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. You don't need anyone to tell people, like, oh, yeah, you know, Bordeaux is good.
Exactly.
I mean, actually, I guess a Zoomer might. A Zoomer Bordeaux critic is a very powerful character to imagine, but maybe we're not there yet. So something I'd like to ask you about as we, you know, you mentioned natural wine is getting better. And I think that's a thing I agree with as well. But something you've also written a couple times about, like the end of yeasty, cloudy wines, your aversion to those and the introduction of natural wine into the fine wine canon. And I wonder if we can kind of speak to what you think the future of natural wine is, which is, I know, such an annoying question to ask.
Is gorgeous.
Thanks for listening to the preview of our exclusive interview with Simon Wolfe. The full version can be heard at www.patreon.com/disgorgeous, where you can find a lot of other interviews that I've been doing with some people who are cool, some people who are dumb, and some people who are my family members. So that link again, it's www.patreon.com/disgorgeous. But do tell me what www.com looks like. I bet it's pretty cool. Thank you, and I'll see you at the movies.